The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Johnny Nicol with you. Johnny, great to have you back on board this week as Simon Gallivants around the UK.
Thanks, Ben. It's good to be here. I've got quite big shoes to fill, and hopefully I'll keep the good ship J-Talk steering in the right direction this week.
Well, absolutely terrific to have you here, Johnny. Fantastic stuff. Now, full disclosure for the listeners here, we have discussed this in the green room. We're certainly not going to pretend that the fixtures involving our two clubs, Gunma Osaka and FC Tokyo, were the biggest in match day 29 by any means. But for the sake of the podcast, Johnny, how about we do Gunma first? Obviously, a very disappointing result and frustrating performance from your side, losing 3-1 away at Kashima on Saturday. I imagine you've got quite a bit you'd like to get off your chest. But, rather than just barging straight in on Gunma, Kashima have rebounded superbly from a very disappointing performance last week against Fukuoka and thoroughly deserved the 3 points against your team.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ben, for allowing me to get this out of the way, and I can enjoy the rest of the podcast after we talk about this. But like you say, Kashima had a poor result last week, and then I think they were very, very comfortable here. Like, I think if you just watch the highlights, I think you get a pretty good feel for the way this game went. Even the one that the penalty Gunma got, I think, sort of flattered them a bit. First half was a bit of a non-event, but I almost felt like Kashima kind of stalking their prey, and, Gunma didn't really offer much in return. I thought Pituka again, he was influential in midfield. Machida coming back in definitely helped them stabilise at the back. And I wanted to say a kind of quick word about Kento Mizao, the captain. Not necessarily for his play, but more for his captaincy. Because, you know, one of my favourites, Jakub Slovic, he kind of let himself down a bit. I think last week when Gunma were awarded a penalty against Sendai with some of his antics, Mizawa, I thought, was very good because, you know, Kashima 3-0 up, gave away a penalty. There was a few complaints. I think Koki Anzai was kind of in Thiago Alves' face, the referee was there. And Mizawa got right in amongst them, and he pushed his own teammates away and said, "Right, boys, that's enough." I mean, whether we would have done that if it was at 0-0, I don't know. But yeah. I thought that was it was pretty good for him. From Gunma, you know, they said they had a players-only meeting in midweek to try and kind of clear the air and work out where they were going to go from here. There was a lot of positive talk about shutting down Kashima, getting in their faces. There was none of that, to be honest, at any real point until really Usami and Thiago Alves came on when the game was already 3-0 in the bag for Kashima. I'm not sure why Usami was left out, and Shinya Yajima again in that kind of advanced role where he doesn't really excel. I mean, yeah, it's not good from Gunma. They've got 9 games to go. I'm obviously going to talk about teams kind of lower down the league than them. You'd think a couple of wins somewhere along the line would get them over the finishing line. Where I take kind of solace from is, I think it was many years ago, Mike Tyson said that, you know, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And I think Gunma have taken quite a few punches in the mouth this year. But then if you can compare to, like, Kashima, like, last week they were missing their two centre-backs. That was all they were missing. They weren't missing anyone else. They really struggled. We'll come on to talk about even the top two, Marinos and Kawasaki, lose a couple of players and, you know, they don't look quite as hot. You know, Gunma were missing kind of 5 players from the matchday squad here. Well, hopefully we can get a couple of them back. And, you know, I've managed to finally get myself some tickets for the game against Kashima this week. So hopefully, from my perspective, the revival starts there. Kashima, again, it must be very frustrating for their fans because on their day, you know, they can match the best of them, but they're miles off the pace. But, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. Hopefully these two teams, they're struggling a bit to match previous heights this year, but maybe they might bounce back stronger next year.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Johnny. So, just to run through the goals here, after a goalless first half, ISA Wada followed up after Masaaki Higashiguchi saved Ryotaro Araki's shot to give Antlers a lead 7 minutes after the break. Then on the hour, Juan Alano headed in a superb cross from the right from Rikuto Hirose. Sean Madoy was afforded the freedom of the centre of the Kashima Soccer Stadium, basically dribbled forward 30 yards and from inside the D fired home in off Hikashi Higuchi's gloves. And then, Sagumba were awarded that penalty that Thiago Alves finished off with 10 minutes to go. So, Johnny, the last time you were on, you were pleased with how Gumba were performing in all their games in hand during the Olympic break. But I don't know, we obviously did something in that episode to mess with Gumba's juju. As since then, it's fair to say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure you share this opinion, it's been an unmitigated disaster. Just one win in eight. Players only meetings. I mean, the desperate times call for desperate measures. But, yeah, hopefully this appearance from you will flip Gumba's luck back on its head. And, you can cheer them on to victory, as you say, when you head to the game against Kashiwa this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the word disaster, and Gamba have now they've now lost 15 of their 29 games, and in an 18-team J-League, the record amount of losses, even the season they went down, was only 14, and we're only at round 29. They've already lost 15, which kind of gives you some sort of scale. I think, you know, just that run of games in the summer, they just had the mind so much focused on that, just game, that has just kind of ripped the heart out of the team. There's no real kind of passion or commitment, or doesn't seem to be much fight, and there's absolutely no confidence with some of these players. Like you mentioned that, I obviously knew you was coming on, and when your friend Shoma was running through the Kashima Soccer Stadium, I think there was only one outcome, and it was very much that way. Like last week when Takuma Nishimura scored for Sendai, It's like could you're almost begging, could one of these players just miss hit it, just kick the ground or something? But yeah, we're on a run. It's not looking good. You just have to hope that there's so many talented players or staff at Gamba that they can just pull together, even for a couple of wins, maybe even a couple of draws added in. And that will be enough for them. I think the whole club just want this season to end. We can reset. We can get a new manager next year. A few new players. Yamami's in for next season. Like get Wellington Silva fit and integrated. It's all just about survival this year, which I really didn't think I'd be saying at the start of this year.
No, fair enough then. And Graham Freche is back with a few questions this week. You've seen them all, obviously, of course, Johnny. I mean, the word disastrous came up in Graham Freche's question about Gumba. He asked basically if you think Gumba have given up on this season. I mean, you know, that's a bit maybe that expression, I think, is perhaps not the correct one. But yeah, as you say, they just want this annus horribilis to be done with, Johnny. Because I mean, you know, it's we've all got short memories these days, but I mean, you guys literally finished second last season, and while a long way off the pace that Kawasaki, the record-setting pace that Kawasaki set, to fall off as much as your side has. I mean, obviously, there's so many mitigating circumstances with half the squad getting corona in the first month of the season is basically from there you I guess you just knew that it wasn't going to be your year for a number of reasons. So yes, we'll give Kashima their full credit for bouncing back. Obviously, there's a lot more we could talk about Gumba, but as we said at the start, we're fully aware that the games involving Gumba and FC Tokyo were not the absolute pick of the crop from match day 29. But for the sake of a continuity, we'll quickly touch on FC Tokyo's 4-0 home win over Yokohama FC. Next, a pair of braces from a pair of Brazilians was enough for Tokyo to basically sweep Yokohama FC aside. Diego Oliveira and Leandro both bagging braces. Some terrific, the first three goals especially were absolutely terrific. And it's not like FC Tokyo to actually take care of business against a lower ranking opponent, Johnny. So it was very pleasing to see. From my perspective, and especially with as we mentioned last week with Dan Orlowitz, Yuto Nagatomo back into the fold and straight into the 11 after 11 years away from the club, and great to see him back in an FC Tokyo kit. Certainly very vocal out on the pitch, and has a lot to add, I think, to the squad for the remainder of this season, and again for however long he's there, with sharing his experience from some of the better leagues in Europe. So again, apologies for how poorly Gumba played, but from my perspective, and again for the sake of the podcast, it would have been a very short one if both our teams had have lost. A very satisfying performance from FC Tokyo, but again, not getting carried away, knowing it was against the bottom team in the league.
Yeah, well, I'd like to extend thanks because obviously Yokohama FC are one of the teams in the relegation zone, so you managed to help us keep our 12-point advantage to them. And I noticed a friend of the pod, Yutaro Hakamata, was back in the Yokohama FC defence, and with a return of some of the horrible defending from before. I agree with you. I think, yeah, the pitch looked dreadful. It looked, well, like very heavy rain, obviously, in the Kanto area this weekend, but... Yeah, you kind of Otri Dente seemed to master the conditions and play very well. But it was very, very interesting your discussion that you, Sam and Dan had last week about Yuto Nagatomo. And it was also very interesting to hear kind of Dan's thoughts about the Olympics, Paralympics and Wii League. I thought that was really fascinating. But just kind of going on from that, you mentioned about like Nagatomo's age, but whereas maybe the other fullbacks are not so old or not so experienced, so he can act as a mentor. Maybe more like an attack. Like, I mean, Diego Oliveira with his two goals here, he's now a sort of an outside bet for the golden boot. But both he and Adailton and Nagai, they're all kind of getting on a bit, like early 30s. I mean, obviously people don't, their level doesn't fall off a cliff when they get past their 30s. But if everyone in an area is kind of aging at the same time, it might be a bit of a concern. And then you've kind of got in the midfield, you've got like Higashi. I know he's not the most popular with some of the fans, or Takahagi, Mita. I think Aoki you brought in, I thought that was a very safe, conservative signing, but maybe like Daiki Matsuoka might have been a better option. And then you've got like Morishige or Omari at the back. How are Tokyo fans feeling, especially with like Kenta Hasegawa kind of has previous at Gamba, like the final 6 months, the team rather fell apart. It was just like one battle too much. As a Tokyo fan, like coming up to the winter, what do you expect them to do and what would you like to see them do kind of transfer-wise?
There certainly is going to become a reckoning where they're going to need to freshen up in a number of positions in the same off season or in the same transfer window, I think. And it seems like they just keep pushing it back and you know, signing. I mean, the Aoki signing was head scratching for a number of reasons, but you know, not to single him out, but it was yet another example of a puzzling transfer decision. And I think that your expression safe is very apt, and we just want to see some of our youngsters come through and be given, you know, proper chances in the team, because I mean our under-18s are always doing well in the various tournaments they enter. We obviously were able to give a number of opportunities to so many players having the under-23 team in J3 for however many years it was, 3 or 4, wasn't it? And but here we are. If you look at the average age of the starting 11 on Saturday night, and again, Nagatomo doesn't help that statistic. I appreciate, and again, you could consider his signing to be a safe one, but more one to, as we said last week, I think to appease the fans, but to also to get some passion back into the club, because you could see from the moment he stepped on the pitch on Saturday night that how much it means to Nagatomo. And at 35, if he has another year or two left to play at the highest level, then I just hope that he rubs off on the likes of Ryoya Ogawa, who often just cruises through games and looks like he's just happy to be out there rather than actually burning to want to win the game. So, there needs to be a... Sorry, I've ventured off your point, Johnny, but there needs to be a freshening up, and there's going to have to be some dead wood cut, and it's just something that Tokyo have never really been able to do in the entire time I've supported them. They always seem to have been very heavy... a veteran-based squad, and it's always been a problem to bringing youngsters through. And I mean, the first time that Takefusa Kubo was at the club before he was loaned to Yokohama F. Marinos, you know, whether he was ready, truly ready for first team football at that stage or not, we don't know, but he was never given the opportunity. And maybe it's related to the... I guess the philosophy of some of the managers that we've had, but we've never really seen a true youngster come through at 18, 19. Most of the young players we get are out of university. So, Yeah, it's a good question, one that I've wondered about many times over the years, and so there will definitely have to be a cleaning of the house, and yeah, you might see three or four shipped out this winter. I wouldn't want to single any out at this stage, but yeah, there's a few I wouldn't mind seeing the back of, and then hopefully that means some more opportunities for some youngsters next year. But a good question, and as I say, yeah, one that I have given a lot of thought to over the years. Okay, so there you go. That's the two games involving our teams out of the way. We can now move on to the biggest talking points from match day 29 over the weekend, and they didn't come much bigger, Johnny, than at the Toyota Stadium, where Nagoya Grampus hosted Yokohama F. Marinos. F. Marinos, of course, had to close to within a point of Kawasaki last week. But, the two games that we're going to come on to, the buffer for Frontale is back out to 4 points. Nagoya won 2-1 at home over F. Marinos, carrying on after a terrific result in the ACL in midweek as well. And this was the pick of the fixtures, Johnny, and it certainly did not disappoint.
Yeah, I don't know if Marinos fans would agree with me, but for me as a neutral, this is probably one of the best games I've seen this season. Two strong teams, blood and thunder, going at it, no inch given or taken. Kind of coming into the game, I saw the first half of Marinos game with Sam Frecci the previous week before kind of retiring to bed after having my second vaccination. And I was kind of thinking they're not going to get away with such a sluggish start against Nagoya this week. And I also saw the first half of Nagoya's game against Daegu, and they obviously get given a pretty tough game midweek. So it was very interesting coming into this to see which team would gain the upper hand early on.
Yes, indeed. Now, F. Marinos supporters probably feel a little bit hard done to at the two goals they've conceded, Johnny. But at the same time, you have to give Nagoya credit. Shinosuke Nakatani netting in the 12th minute. A difficult one to explain. I struggle at the best of times, Johnny. But, for a goal like this where somebody's shot balloons up in the air and could literally go anywhere... It's ended up at the feet of a Grampus player who's cut the ball back, and Nakatani has ended up bundling in. And then in the first minute of the second half, Jakub Swiatkowski, who has followed on from his hat-trick in the ACL in midweek, was the beneficiary after Naoki Maeda robbed Tomoki Iwata. So, again, two goals that you can't really draw up to defend from an F. Marinos perspective. But, again, you have to give credit to Nagoya for... for being in the right place at the right time, but then also for the second with Maeda getting just rewards for his closing down on Iwata.
Yeah, I used the umbrella term pinball for the first goal, but I don't think it really describes it. But
yeah.
I think one of the interesting things was, like, because I believe Svierchok, or N40 as I use his code in my notes, is a bit easier to say. I think he was the big difference here, because I remember watching, I think it was just last month, that the reverse fixture was played and he made his debut, I think, as a sub. And it was a very weak offensive performance by Nagoya. Whereas here the boot was very much on the other foot. You had Svierchok up against Iwata and Sanito as the backup centre-backs. And as you saw, it was Iwata who gave the ball away to Naoki Maeda for the second goal. First goal, it just seemed like Nagoya wanted it more. The ball was pinging about all over the place, and it was always Nagoya foot on it. Yeah, Marinos, I mean, they were decent, and they had chances. But, yeah, away to Nagoya, I think you need to be better than decent. Nagoya had the bit between their teeth, and... Yeah, I mean, if it finished 2-2, I wouldn't say it was a massively wrong result. But I think, Nagoya, the way they took the bull by the horns early on, got that two-goal advantage. And they are not a team you want to be two goals behind against, especially away from home.
Indeed. So, a couple of second-half substitutes of note for F. Marinos. We firstly saw Ryo Miyaichi come on for Daisen Maeda 10 minutes after the break, and a very well-known player in Japanese footballing circles, Miyaichi, but this was actually, his J-League debut coming on for that. And so just before we move on to talk about F. Marinos' goal, Johnny, what sort of an impact did Miyaichi make? Obviously, it's hard to judge off, 35 minutes in his F. Marinos debut, but I don't know, was obviously probably had a bit of rust to shake off, but how did he look?
Yeah, the zone commentators were very, very excited about his arrival, but he came on for Daisen Maeda, who I thought was the biggest threat to Nagoya. I don't really understand why he was taken off so early, because yeah, I think him and Marcos Jr. were the two main dangers in the first half. And yeah, Miyaichi, by the time he came on, they were already 2-0 down, so Nagoya had kind of got into their shape and they were quite happy to settle for just scoring two goals. And then I think a bit later on, they obviously went to more of a kind of 5-4-1 to close the game out. Miyaichi didn't do a lot for me, and he's got his injury, or he's obviously had injury problems in the past. I think he looked quite rusty, and yeah, it seems a bit strange because Marinos did end up scoring after he came on, but I think that was more just the way the game was going, Nagoya sitting back rather than Miyaichi in any way really being an upgrade for the pretty impressive, again, Daisen Maeda.
Okay, yeah, fair enough then. So, yeah, it was another F. Marinos sub who got it back to 2-1 with 18 minutes left. Just 3 minutes after he came off the bench, Kenyu Sugimoto headed in superbly at the near post, headed in a corner. But Nagoya were able to hang on. They're obviously record-setting a clean sheet, earning defence. Weren't able to, make it 20 on the season. But, they've 20 or 19. Hang on, I've lost count, Johnny. There's that many. But, add to their already a record-setting tally, but they'll be trying to do that on Wednesday night when they visit FC Tokyo. So, yeah, for Grampus, they're now back up into the top three. Of course, they were the closest challengers to Kawasaki for, pretty much the entire first half of the season, as they had played a number of more fixtures than most of the other teams around them, with a lot of front-loaded games with the ACL in mind. Then during the ACL and the Olympic break, of course, F. Marinos passed them by, and Grampus did slip as far back as sixth. But, as a number of teams play musical chairs in the battle for third, this is indeed, I believe, it's the seventh straight week, I think, Johnny, the seventh straight match day that we've had a different occupant in third spot at the end of play. Tosu have been there a total of three of those seven match days, and Kashima 2, while Kobe have been in there after match day 26, and yes, Nagoya replaced Tosu in third after match day 29. So when the music stops, we don't know who is going to be in third. I wonder if it might even be Urawa, Johnny, who seemed to be timing their run especially nicely. But just before we move on then, we have mentioned in passing Grampus's 4-2 win over Daegu in the round of 16 of the ACL on Tuesday night. So, yes, Sviatchok was the hat-trick hero quite the barn burner at the Toyota Stadium.
Yeah, I caught the first half of this live in a break from work, and I just caught the highlights in the after the game. And, yeah, halftime, obviously, Daegu were winning 2-1, but I wasn't surprised to see Nagoya ended up winning that in the end. It was a bit smash and grab from Daegu in the first half. I think they had two or three chances and scored two of them. But yeah, you guys talked about like Nagatomo last week. Is he the right fit for FC Tokyo at this time? I think there's absolutely no doubt that Sviatchok is 100% the player that Nagoya have needed for the last 18 months. We're quite honest. I mean, with that defence and him up front with sort of Matthias off him, you know, you're talking about Urawa like potentially making a charge for Champions League next season. Again, Urawa, Grampus, teams like that, they could potentially be shaping up for a title push next year. I think heavy conditions in the pitch again would have taken a lot out of the players. But yeah, he really, he if he hadn't announced himself already, I think Sviatchok firmly put himself into the hearts of the Grampus faithful with that hat-trick against Daegu.
Most definitely. So we're elsewhere on Tuesday, the battle of the heavy hitters, Ulsan and Kawasaki. Unfortunately for the neutrals, ended goalless. And unfortunately for Japanese football supporters, it ended with Kawasaki going out on penalties. So, a painful blow for Frontale after they had made the ACL a focus this season. Their wait for Continental Glory goes on. And then on Wednesday, there was also disappointment for the pink half of Osaka, Johnny. I'm not sure how disappointed Gumba supporters were in that. But yes, to see Cerezo losing in pretty ordinary fashion, 1-0 at home to Pohang of South Korea. So that means that, yes, of the three J1 clubs, only Nagoya are through to the East semi-finals. Nagoya will play Pohang in the middle of October, I believe it is, and then it's Ulsan versus Daegu sorry, not Daegu, Ulsan versus Junbuk in the other East Zone semi-final. So we'll move on to talk about Kawasaki rebounding from their ACL disappointment by heading down to Tokushima on Saturday night, Johnny, and running out 3-1 winners over Tokushima Vortis, and in the process, with the F Marinos losing, re-establishing their 4-point buffer at the top. But it's fair to say that Frontale definitely didn't have it all their own way down at the Pocari Sweat Stadium, especially in the first 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, I think the result is absolutely the most important thing for Kawasaki here, especially with the Marinos game, like Marinos going down. Like you mentioned, in midweek they had a tough 120 minutes away to Ulsan, and then losing out in penalties. Again, a very, very heavy pitch. There was no Joao Schmidt, Damian and Kobayashi, Ienaga. None of them were in the starting lineup. So, yeah, it was a pretty sluggish start. Tokushima obviously fighting for their lives down the bottom. So, yeah, Kawasaki would be very happy to come away from what can be a tricky away game with all 3 points.
Most definitely. So, we were discussing via text before we came on this evening, Johnny, about how unfortunate Vortis were when they had what looked like, a perfectly legitimate-looking goal wiped away by VAR for offside in the build-up. Kazuki Nishia scored in the 11th minute, a tremendous finish. But, yes, VAR instructed the referee to disallow the goal on a very, very marginal offside decision. Johnny, surely if you're level, you're onside. And to me, it looked like the Vortis attacker was level, if not slightly onside, to begin with.
Well, this is the last thing you want when you come into a game like this, and Tokushima hadn't scored for the five previous games, and you're playing the defending champions. And I think I mentioned to you in our text chat, millimetres, if anything, and not a single Kawasaki player complained. They all just got back into the position, right, we're going to have to come from 1-0 down. So, yeah, this is the kind of thing I don't like to see VAR used for. You know, so the goal's been scored, that the referee's decision is a goal, and it's clear and obvious, I think, is what's meant to be, to overturn the decision. Yeah. And I mean, who's looking at that and thinking that's clearly and obviously offside? I think the goal should have stood. And, yeah, Tokushima can count themselves very unfortunate. Whether that, in the end, whether that did affect the result is not the point. That they should have had the goal, I think.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. So, they didn't let their heads drop, though. And Kazunari Ichimi, a player you know quite well, Johnny, fired wildly over with a first-time shot from just inside the penalty spot in the 17th minute. And then 10 minutes before the break, Frontale broke the deadlock when Marcinho dribbled into the box and was upended by Seiya Fujita. Kei Chinen slotted home the penalty. But before the break, there was still time for two more goals. Ichimi atoned for his earlier miss with a tremendous volley from the edge of the D in the 38th minute. But Yasuto Wakizaka, who was actually the senior partner in midfield for Kawasaki on Saturday night, with his partners Tachi Banada and Hatate, Wakizaka put the champions back in front with a crisp strike from the edge of the box 3 minutes before the break. And then 7 minutes into the second half, Chinen finished off the scoring when he headed in a corner to finish off his brace. Vortis did keep going, though, Johnny, and interestingly, they brought on the former Norwegian international Mushaga Bakenga for his debut with just under half an hour to go. He featured prominently on the highlights package I saw after coming on. It looked very lively, and certainly he'll be, a major asset for Danny Poyatos in the last 9 games of the season as Vortis look to stave off relegation.
Yeah, he came on, and he did look lively, but I think, you're mentioning the highlights. It looked like Tokushima gave Kawasaki a good game. They did to an extent. Like they'd gone back to a kind of 4-4-2. They had Kakita and Ichimi up, and they were a bit more direct, because obviously we've talked before about them just kind of passing for the sake of passing. They did cause issues at times, but they kind of ran into the problem that Kawasaki just have better players all over the field. And yeah, they got those goals at crucial times. I thought Wakizaka, like you mentioned, he had a good game in midfield. Marcinho and Hatate both went off injured in the second half, but Marcinho looked very lively, his pace and trickery, and You had Chinen got the two goals. Tono looked good, albeit against quite a weak-looking Tokushima backline. I think they had some injuries and suspensions in the wide areas. Bakenga is going to have to be the ace in the pack for Tokushima because, you know, they're in a horrible losing run. They've won six games all year. There's only nine games to go. I'm kind of thinking, you know, I think Sean Carroll mentioned on J-Talk Extra Time, he would ban substitutions in the last 5 minutes of games because there's no chance for our players to make an impact. If almost were like that with players coming into a new country, a new league with nine games to go, right? On you go, save us from relegation. It's a bit unfair to pin all your hopes on him, but if he gets injured or he doesn't turn up the goods, I think Tokushima are going to have a bit of difficulty getting out of that drop zone. Would you go along with that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously it looks really tough for the current bottom four, doesn't it? I mean, even Shonan rescuing that point at the death against Fukuoka that we're going to come on to later. I mean, that, you know, that makes them 4 points better off than Tokushima, and you know, their goal difference advantage makes it basically that's worth an extra point, isn't it? So, you know, it's after we've played this many games, and you know, the likes of Vortis and Sendai are going to need to win at least three or four of their last nine to have any chance of being safe. It's hard to envision that when they've literally won four or five times all season so far. So, but yes, obviously we know that if there's any league where a team's going to perform a miracle, it is absolutely this one. So, yes, I don't think we can put black texter through anybody yet, but it is looking increasingly more and more difficult on a week-to-week basis for Vortis, Sendai, Oita, and especially now Yokohama FC. The Grant Fritcher had a question, and again, it's a reactionary one, but it's certainly one I understand, Johnny, and I think it's something that we're going to basically have to deal with on a week-to-week basis when it comes to Frontale and F. Marinos from this point on, with nine games left, but of course, keeping in mind that Frontale have 10, they still have to make up their game against Kobe, so they do have a game in hand as well as a four-point advantage. Graham Frecce says, with Frontale winning and Yokohama losing, is the title race now over? I mean, I'm sure there's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek to that because all we can do on this podcast on a week-to-week basis is react to the most recent results. So, yeah, slightly off par, off kilter, if Marinos get done by Nagoya and Kawasaki have a much easier looking game on paper and they take care of business. So obviously when we're coming on to talk about those two teams this week, we would be more complimentary about Frontale. But it's still obviously there's so much football to be played. They're still so close together. They still have that final day meeting looming on the, well, it is still the distant horizon. So many games still to be played before then. It's just impossible to call, isn't it?
Yeah, I think like we mentioned in the green room, I'm not going to make any call one way or the other. Just a kind of few things to note, this was Kawasaki's eighth consecutive away game in the league. And then obviously in midweek, they're playing Kashima away, which a bit like Marino's game at Nagoya, it's a very losable game. If they could come through that with even a draw, that would definitely help them massively. They do after that, they then crucially have five home games in a row. But I mean, another thing I noticed in the run-in, Marinos and Frontale's run-ins are actually very similar, as they both play Urawa, FC Tokyo, Cerezo, Gamba, Kobe, and Shonan. And like you mentioned, they play each other in the final game. So it's going to come down to thin margins. Kawasaki have obviously, they've got a few injuries, like Taniguchi, and then you saw that Marcinho, Hatate went off in this game. Marinos have the two centre-backs out. If they were to lose another player, say in central midfield, or one of their Brazilians, that would tilt towards Frontale. I am confident to say it's not going to be over way before the end. It might not quite go down to that final day, but I think it is going to go down to the last two games at the very least. Two very good teams, and it is good to have a title race in our hands after what went on for kind of a year and a half before this.
Yes, agreed wholeheartedly there. Okay, so yeah, you mentioned, Johnny, that Kawasaki travel to Kashima on Wednesday night. That's another one of the games brought forward from match day 32 for ACL scheduling purposes. But of course, the Nagoya are the only team that actually affects now. But yes, the league had already brought forward Nagoya's trip to FC Tokyo, Kawasaki's trip to Kashima. And in case I forget later on, the other game on Wednesday night is Hiroshima hosting Cerezo Osaka. Okay, so we'll move on then. Elsewhere in match day 29 action in the race for third, Kobe and Urawa both claimed home wins. Vissel going ahead against Sapporo in the first half hour through Yuya Nakasaka, and then hanging on for a 1-0 win, their first victory in three. Reds took an even earlier lead, courtesy of Ataru Esaka's 10th minute effort, and Koya Yuruki obviously had so much fun scoring his first league goal of the season last week. He went and scored again, his goal on the hour, a neat finish after he controlled a lovely ball over the top from Iwanami, wrapped up the 2-0 win and kept Reds in sixth, 2 points behind Nagoya. So we've mentioned it in recent episodes, Johnny. You could throw a blanket over, well, it's five teams, isn't it, including Kashima, of course, in the race for third. So basically it's going to be a who blinks on a week-to-week basis. As we said, with musical chairs in third spot, all you want to do is keep in touch, especially with so many games still to be played.
Yeah, I think obviously Kobe are now down in fourth, but they do have a game in hand, though on the other hand, that is away to Kawasaki, so I don't know how much they can count on getting 3 points from that game. I think one thing that's kind of interesting is like the way the ACL's panned out this year and also last year. You almost wonder, like, I don't mean to be mean to Tosu, but I struggle to see them challenging for the title next season, but any of those other four teams like Nagoya, Kobe, Urawa, Kashima, I think the kind of the players, the management and the fans could rightly expect that they might challenge Kawasaki and Marinos a bit more than they've done this year, especially with both Kawasaki and Marinos, but barring something unthinkable happening, that they would qualify for next season's ACL and potentially might even lose a couple more players over the winter. So you almost wonder, teams like Urawa, they're kind of gearing up under Rodriguez. He said that He was aiming to get into the ACL and win the Emperor's Cup. It might actually be an advantage more in the long term. See, if you were to come in like fifth spot, it might give you an advantage over those other teams. So I think with Kobe, the way Mikitani works, he will be looking to qualify for the ACL. They're kind of tinkering a bit with the system, which I don't like. I know me and Sam kind of talked earlier in the year about how they'd managed to kind of get rid of some old habits, but since Iniesta's come back and then Muto and Osaka have come in and then got Bojan to come in, you wonder, are they going to start bending the team shape to the players, and then that might see them slip down? But then you've got against Nagoya, they're still in the Champions League. Kashima, Everaldo can't buy a goal, and every time you think they're going to push for a third, they lose horribly. Reds are still developing, so the strikes for and against each team. I think all of these teams in the top seven, I think they can, we're comfortable they are the best teams. How they push on from here, I'm not going to be in a position to call. How about you? Any inclination?
Yeah, no, don't do it to me, Johnny. Yeah, I mean, after the dust settled after the weekend, it was like, well, okay, yeah, of course Nagoya are legitimate challenges for third, but then yeah, you remember that they're still in the ACL and they're obviously going to have to. Well, you would certainly hope they would make that a focus when they're this deep into the competition, but yes, at the same time, Massimo Ficcadenti knows where his bread is buttered, and yeah, he wants to finish as high as he can in the league. So yes, at this stage, I always feel like we're talking down to Tosu, like we're giving them an encouragement award for doing so well. But yeah, I basically, and again, this is not the best week to make this comment after they've just drawn 0-0 against the second from bottom team. But yeah, they are basically, I think you're right to say they're the only ones that might not feature in the title race next season. But for me, they're the only one that maybe can't finish third this year as well. You know, again, they've spent so long up there this season, and you know they've gone through so much as a team, losing key personnel for numerous reasons, and obviously, having problems with their coach as well. But yeah, the fact that they're still up in the top six is frankly phenomenal. But yeah, I'm Apart from them, it's impossible to call, I think, for any of the others in the battle for third. But again, it's the wrong time to talk about Tosu after they've drawn a 0-0 with Oita in a Kyushu derby that we should say was moved back from Friday night to Saturday as the typhoon number 14 approached. So kudos to the J-League for firstly showing the foresight to postpone the game on Friday. But then, rather than have this game linger in the ether for a couple of months and then finally get played towards the end of the season, yes, they saw that they were able to play it the following night. And obviously the fact that both teams are based in Kyushu, it would just be a short trip for Oita to travel over to Tosu, then that would be, that game would be able to be played the next night. So just from the highlights, Johnny, it looked like Tosu just huffed and puffed, but they couldn't find a way past Shun Takagi in the Oita goal, and ultimately, I guess, just a frustrating evening for them.
Yeah, I think the draw realistically here doesn't suit either team. Tosu, home to second bottom. I mean, we've written them out of the third place race, but I don't think they'll have done that themselves, so they'll be kicking themselves. They haven't picked up the 3 points. Again, Oita, they've 21 points in 29 games. They need every point they can get. And we were kind of joking before this that the sole attacking highlight for Oita in the first half was Hokuto Shimoda's misplaced pass on the edge of the box, which I think sums up their kind of attacking intent. It was probably a bit of a blessing in disguise for me. Anyway, this was moved from Friday to Saturday because I was going to watch it live on Friday, and then it got put back to Saturday and obviously got lost in the shuffle. And then I saw that Shun Nagasawa got back in the starting lineup for Oita. And I wondered in Sam's absence, was he going to hit us with something special? But that obviously didn't happen. So Sam can rest easy. But yeah, I mean, Tosu, we're talking about next season. I mean, they have been quick out the blocks, very organised. They've already announced like 6 new signings for next season. I think 5 of them from universities and 1 from a backup goalie from the Kanto League, I think. So I guess they're probably kind of envisaging being raided by, you know, we mentioned teams like FC Tokyo be looking for some new players. I didn't actually mention earlier, Cerezo, I think, are very much in the same boat as FC Tokyo. They desperately need mid-20s players. So they're obviously getting their house in order. And, you know, I think you were talking the other week with Scott McIntyre about how Yokohama FC, they've invested money that at least they're trying to do something. For me, that almost kind of highlights more that Yokohama FC are in the position they are because of bad decisions rather than resources. Whereas I think teams like Oita and Sendai, who we'll come on to later, I think it's more just a simple lack of resources. You know, Oita lost Tatsuya Tanaka to Urawa, and then the double blow of losing like Suzuki and Iwata at the back, in addition to having lost like Fujimoto and Onaiwu in previous years. I think teams like Oita can replace those players long term with like good university recruitment or youth development, but you know, losing 3 players like that in one hit, it's not really feasible for them to really replace that. And you know, looking at the squad they've got, like Goya, Nomura and Masayama, that'll make a deadly front 3 in J2 next season, but they just don't quite have it to really do in J1. But you know, both these teams are very likable and I wish them well, but this game, it didn't really seem like it lived up to very high standards, I think.
Yes, indeed, yeah. I mean, Tosu, just they keep defying expectations. So, yeah, we're probably will end up with egg on their faces, yeah, tipping them, basically ruling them out of the running for third. But, yes, they've surprised us pretty much all season. So, we're quite brave to rule them out at this point of proceedings. But, yes, Oita, it does look a very, very tall order for them to threaten to get out of the drop zone at this stage. We're motoring through these games, Johnny. So we've just got 3 games left to review now, 2 of which had a big relegation dogfight implications. You've just mentioned Sendai there. You well and truly aware of what Sendai are capable of after last week's game against Gamba. Well, they headed themselves to Shimizu this past Saturday, and it was S-Pulse who gave themselves a little bit more breathing room outside the drop zone after a 2-1 home win over Vegalta. That left Espol 6 points and a decent whack of goal difference above 17th placed Tokushima. Strike partnership Thiago Santana and Noriaki Fujimoto put to Espol's 2-0 ahead. Santana's goal was initially ruled out by the linesman, but confirmed by VAR. That doesn't usually happen in the J-League, does it, Johnny? It's usually always the other way around. But Felipe Cardoso lashed in a goal for Vegalta on the hour to set up a bit of a nervy finale for Espols, but they were able to seal this very important win. I think it was the first win in 9 for Shimizu, Johnny. So, a huge one for the Nihon Daira faithful. And all in all, this looked a decent game from the highlights to boot.
Yeah, this was a very important game for both teams. And Shimizu, like you say, a long run of draws and losses. Vital to get the 3 points. Thiago Santana has been a massive player for them. So it's 10 goals this season, and you have to wonder, sitting 15th in the league, is he really going to be there next season? I could see him fitting in very well at Marinos or Kawasaki or potentially even Kashima. Espol's in their favour. I think all five teams below them have inferior squads. But then when you look at the outlay Espol's have had last winter and then in the summer with all those players coming in, they finished 16th last season. They're only 15th this year. You know, they've not really cracked on very much. You might look at the table and say, well, they might overtake Gamba, or if Cerezo, Kogiku looks to be looking towards younger players, they might sort of drop a couple of places. But yeah, there's just been so much course correction and lack of direction from the top in recent years that the players are there, but they just don't seem capable of pushing on. There seems a lack of depth in general. If one of the defenders gets injured, they're back to last season's defence. And then I've been interested to see, I mentioned him earlier, Daiki Matsuoka, because obviously that was a bit of a surprise signing by Espols. And the couple of times I've seen him, he actually, the player he reminds me of is, I wonder if Sam would agree with me, Darren Fletcher, the former Manchester United and Scotland international. Mm-hmm. The way that when he went from a very good Manchester United team back to play for Scotland, he was not very good at that time. And Scottish fans always got on his back because he's not Cristiano Ronaldo. He's not going to dribble around five players, and he's not known for scoring 30-yard free kicks. Matsuoka and Fletcher, I think, are quite similar in that they'll be very smart and they'll break up attacks and they'll sort of shield the defence. But if they don't have players making smart runs ahead of them, half their game is taken away from them. And that's why I think Matsuoka at the moment is not as effective in that Espols team, because the players ahead of him are not as good as the players at Tosu. So they've obviously brought in five players in the summer, and you mentioned Fujimoto got his goal, and then I think last week they had one of their designated special players playing. So there was six new players, which is a lot of players to bring in the summer. You'd hope they wouldn't make any more big changes this winter, and they might look to push on. I think they should be all right this season, but they would probably have the right to feel, their supporters would have the right to feel that with all that outlay, all the new manager and the new players coming in, they should really be sitting further than 6 points away from the drop zone with 9 games to go.
No, that's very, very well said, Johnny. And I think basket case is a little bit strong, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, the potential of that club, it's very, very high. And to see them struggling down in the bottom half of the table yet again this season, obviously very, very frustrating for the not only the Nihon Daira faithful, but I'm sure the people behind the scenes who have the best interests of the club in heart, but at heart. But they just don't seem to be pushing the right buttons and getting the all of the pieces to fit in order. If they do click, then obviously Espols have the sky is the limit for them. But struggling through this season, and it might need another season of consolidation next year before they see a proper push up the table, I would think. As it was, though, this was a huge victory, as we've both said, Johnny, for Espols, to give them more breathing space in the race to basically stay out of the bottom four. So what about Sendai then? You saw them, as I said, at firsthand last week. They broke a long winless run against your side, but ultimately falling back to yet another defeat here after just 4 wins all season. As I said earlier, they're going to need well, to get above Shonan at the bare minimum, they're going to need to win two more games, and that's presuming that Shonan don't win any more themselves. So for the entire bottom four, as Graham Freche says in his question about S-Pulse, it does look a long road to hoe for all of them, and this could have been the result that saw S-Pulse safe for another season.
Yeah, if you think, I mean, realistically, there's 20 teams in J1 this year, and there's usually 18. So, I mean, simplistically, there's two groups of players that would otherwise be playing in J2 this year, and I think you can kind of see that by some of the points totals down the bottom. And Sendai, I don't know about numbers or things, but just from the outside looking in, it's probably going to be Kyoto and Jubilo are going to come up from J2, and I have to think those teams have bigger budgets than Sendai. I mean, don't get me wrong, they fully deserved to win at Gamba last week. I just felt like I couldn't see them bringing that kind of performance out 2 weeks in a row, and so it proved. Like, last season they were in the bottom two, and this year I think the team overall looks weaker than it did last year. Some of the players they brought in, Keiman Togashi. Again, I know he scored twice against Gamba last week, but, I mean, he wasn't getting a game for Nagasaki in J2. They brought in Naoya Fukumori, who wasn't playing for Shimizu, who've got a terrible defence. That was a two signings. They do have Felipe Cardozo, who, for whatever reason, has not been starting, because as soon as him and Nishimura came on last week against Gamba, the game just changed. They did a whole new threat, and he took his goal very well here. I know Sam mentioned previously he's talked to the football radar guy in Brazil and said he's a pretty decent player. Why he's not been playing more. But, yeah, Sendai, I think, budget issues. You sometimes look at the starting lineup and think there's probably like fifth or sixth in J2 have a similar level of lineup. They've been in J1 for a long time. I almost fear for them if they do go down, and 4 wins in 29 games, it looks like they might. They may struggle to bounce back first time. You know, they're a likeable club again, but yeah, it looks like the curtain is calling for the spell in J1, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. They've probably ridden their luck in a couple of recent seasons. So whether their luck is finally running out, we'll wait and see. S-Pulse were one of only two bottom half teams at kickoff to win in match day 29. The other was a Hiroshima, who edged back up into 10th spot. So they ran out the top half of the table after match day 29 is done and dusted. But before we get to Hiroshima's win away at Kashiwa, let's talk about Shonan, who did not claim the 3 points on Saturday night, but their joy at full time must have felt like a win as they equalised at home against Fukuoka in the 97th minute through Yuki Ohashi. The 1-1 draw saw Belmare slip behind Shimizu, but they're 4 points and an even larger amount of goal difference ahead of 17th place Tokushima, and indeed everybody else currently in the drop zone. So when you factor that in, it's basically worth an extra point. Wanma had given Fukuoka the lead on the half hour, and then Shonan, well, they, again, similar to, I guess, to Tosu at Oita, against Oita, Johnny, they huffed and puffed, and they finally broke through Ohashi, somewhat controversially at the death, they'll certainly take it, and, a point that probably felt like all three for them.
Yeah, I think especially after that 2-0 loss to Oita, if they then could have, I know Fukuoka are much better than Oita this season, but another defeat with no goals scored after playing kind of reasonably well and probably been deserving of the point, I think that would be quite a crushing blow. But I think, like, you know, Fukuoka's penalty, it's one of these, I think John Steele said in J-Talk Extra Time the other week, it's like, defender was guilty of being a human with arms in the box. What else is he supposed to do? I did wonder, because obviously Juanma Delgado, he scored the goal, another goal for him. His celebration, he looked like he was challenging someone, possibly someone who might have given him the nickname the Spanish Nagasawa. I don't know. I don't need to find out more about that. But I felt like, yeah, Fukuoka could also probably feel aggrieved at the end. It did look like Ohashi gave more than a bit of a nudge to the Fukuoka defender. Probably over the course of time, I think, those things probably balanced each other out to make 1-1 a fair result. I think, though, with Fukuoka, I quite like Fukuoka this season, because you know, if you compare them with the other newly promoted side, Tokushima, because they both finished level in points last year, I think Fukuoka are quite realistic. Like, they know who they are. They almost remind me a bit of a kind of, and I mean this as a compliment, as Sam Allardyce's Bolton team from about 20 years ago. Like, they don't have the biggest budget in the league. They don't have the best players, but that doesn't mean they have to get relegated or be anywhere near the relegation zone. I think they play quite a high percentage football, keep the ball away from their own goal. They've obviously got like Jordy Crooks and Emil Salomonsson supplying the bullets for the kind of tall players. Whereas Tokushima, maybe on the other hand, they're a bit more kind of they're dreamers. The style of football, I think, is very beautiful when it comes off. It works quite well in J2, but when you're playing like much better, stronger teams in J1, it doesn't really work. So I'm interested to see where Fukuoka go from here, because you know the squad, I think they'll be able to keep mostly intact, and maybe like some other teams, like, you know, like Cerezo, when they finished high last year, there was kind of calls to go for a more kind of beautiful style of football, and it hasn't quite worked. Will Fukuoka keep the same kind of physical style, or will they kind of look to adapt? But yeah, obviously one thing I think is probably as I'm this kind of Gamba correspondent to mention, like Satoshi Yamaguchi, who's a kind of surprise takeover at Shonan a couple of weeks ago. I'm not sure what to make of that. I know when he left Gamba to go to Shonan, it was kind of reported that he wanted to be the head coach. So I wonder if he was kind of serving an apprenticeship, but you know, avoiding making kind of obvious puns on Binu Kushima's name. I feel like if at any point last year, if they'd got rid of him, I think it would have been justified. But then the fact they just hammered Cerezo 5-1 away and drawn with Urawa and then brought in Yamaguchi at this time, I just do not understand the timing. I mean, how about you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it must have been preordained, because it was at the end of the month, wasn't it? It was like a handover. Yeah. It was like the end of the financial year or something. My contract runs out at the end of August and you can take over on the 1st of September. It was, after all that Ukushima had been through and he'd ridden through so many storms, obviously if there had been relegation last year, then Shonan would have been done for. But yeah, I mean, I think they deserve credit for battling on this year, and he does as well. But yeah, whether he just had enough, because yeah, you obviously wouldn't sack somebody after they've you've scored 5 goals for the first time in how many years in J1. I don't know if they'd ever done that before. And then, as you say, yeah, to draw against Reds, it must have been something that was prearranged. And, we'll wait and see if Yamaguchi can keep them up.
Yeah, I think, like we kind of mentioned earlier, like, it's interesting that Shonan and Tokushima are together, because yeah, you said, like, last year there was relegation, Shonan would have been done for. The year before, of course, it seems like decades ago, the way the world's gone, but we all remember that 1-1 draw at home to Tokushima, which kept them up in 2019. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure Tokushima have the bit between their teeth to overtake Shonan. That 4-point gap, I mean, I wouldn't be massively shocked if Shonan ended up going down, but at the moment, if I was to put money on it, I'd say the bottom four in some order will be the bottom four at the end of the season. And Shonan, for the third year in a row, will somehow still be a J1 club.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed on a personal level, because again, in a normal year, that's the only game I get to go to now, FC Tokyo away at Shonan. So yeah, hopefully they'll still be in J1 next season, so I can head along to that. The final game of the match, so then we've briefly mentioned it already, saw Kashiwa's 3-match winning streak come to a shuddering halt at home against a fellow mid-table side, Hiroshima. Just 3 points separated the sides at kickoff, Johnny, but Douglas Vieira made it look easy at times, bagging a 30-minute hat-trick in Sanfrecce's 3-0 cruise, although it must be said what Kim, the Kashiwa keeper, was doing for the second goal, absolutely beggars belief. Answers on a postcard, please, listeners.
Yeah, I think you mentioned before, like, I remember when, was it last year during the COVID break, we had all these kind of different podcasts on, and I believe Alan Gibson chose Kim as his, like J-League best ever goalkeeper, and that was in the back of an absolutely amazing performance he put on against Gamba and the Levan Cup. And you know, we've said it before, like, he's capable of looking like the best goalkeeper in the world, and then he's also capable of looking like he's never put on a pair of gloves before. I literally What was he thinking? I've lost for words.
Yeah, goodness knows. To be wandering 45, 50 yards from your goal, and Douglas Vieira, I mean, it's a terrific finish from that far out, but Kim Sung-yu, as you say, Johnny, a terrific keeper at times and a very good shot stopper. But yes, his decision making often leaves a lot to be desired, to put it mildly. Douglas Vieira, full credit for his hat trick. And now a couple of questions on these two teams from Grumfreche, Johnny. Although the last time you were on, I think, or the time previous to that, you and Sam did have a lengthy discussion on Kashua Reysol. So they've been one of the more head scratching teams this season, haven't they? Considering some of the players in that squad, although of course they've lost Asaka, and they did have to replace Michael Olunga at the start of the season. But yes, it looked like they'd steadied the ship after three straight wins. As Grumfreche says that they've never really got going this season. And in what direction do you think they're headed?
I think, you know, this season, like you mentioned, like Olunga going, I think has been the biggest loss, because last year he would just get a goal out of nothing in the first 20 minutes of a game, and that would allow them to protect what I think is actually not a particularly good defence. I think Tayo Koga I really like, but I think he's their only good, decent centre-back. I think Kamijima has disappointed a lot since he's come back from being on loan at Fukuoka. And Ominami, I see him getting flagged up a few times for having decent stats, but he just doesn't pass the eye test for me. Yeah, I think they've still got this bloated squad. They've got injuries. It seems like Pedro Howell, he came in and scored a few goals. Now he's out, is potentially injured. Again, it's kind of one of the themes of this pod seems to have been the sort of players, like aging players. Cristiano's 34 now, so they're seeing like lesser returns from him. Esaka's gone, Olunga's out. Yeah, they need a trimmed-down squad, and I think they need to decide fully what the formation is going forward, and they need someone to score goals, which sounds a bit obvious. But, yeah, I think I group Kashiwa, Cerezo and Gamba all together, you know, the 12th, 13th, 14th, teams you'd expect to be in the top half. All three of those teams have very talented players and very talented people behind the scenes, but it just seems that they're not all pulling in the same direction. So, yeah, if Kashiwa can get everyone pulling in the right direction, or they can pull another jack-in-the-box kind of signing like a Lunga who's going to paper over the cracks, then they can push on again towards the upper reaches of the league. If they don't do much kind of like surgery over the winter and they continue to have all these like way too many foreign players, an aging Cristiano being their main attacking threat, a less than stellar defence, a goalkeeper who's amazing one week and gifting goals the next, then they're probably going to struggle again in mid-table. It's difficult to say one way or another what way they're going to end up. Do you have anything else to add to that?
No, Ben? Yeah, that's very well said. Yeah, I agree. They're obviously behind the eight ball from the start of the season, having to try and replace basically the irreplaceable, the sort of player we've really seen in the last 10 years in J1. So to have him and then to suddenly have an Olunga-shaped hole in your starting 11 must have been a huge shock to the system for not only Nelsinho, but yes, the rest of the players as well, who, as you say, Johnny, you could just give the ball to Olunga and he could make something out of nothing. So, to have that luxury taken away from you must have, as we said, taken a lot of getting used to. And, if only they could have played this poorly last week against FC Tokyo, Johnny, but it wasn't to be. Grumfreche, finishing off with a question about Senfreche, asking what was the biggest reason for this strong performance when they came in with just one win in their last eight. I mean, I think a lot of it owes to the inconsistency of Kashiwa and a good day at the office for Douglas Vieira. I mean, the first goal was a terrific finish from a lovely through ball from Toshihiro Aoyama. The second one was basically assisted by Kim Sung-yu going walkabout 50 yards from his goal. And the third, it came to him somewhat fortuitously in the box, but a terrific finish. So a good hat-trick from Douglas Vieira. Hiroshima taking their chances where they at times are guilty of not doing that. So I think all in all that adds up to one of the more impressive performances and especially results of the season for Hiroshima. That, as we said, saw them edge back into the top half of the table in 10th. So, yeah, that is all 10 games rounded up from match day 29 then. We've mentioned the three games from match day 32 that will be played on Wednesday this week. And then on the weekend, match day 30 is highlighted by three derbies. Yokohama FC host Yokohama F. Marinos at Mitsuzawa. Of course, that's a home away from home anyway for F. Marinos. That's on Saturday. There's a Kanagawa derby, well, another Kanagawa derby at Todoroki on Saturday, Sunday? On Sunday with Kawasaki hosting Shonan, and it's back-to-back Kyushu derbies for Tosu after a drawing with Oita. They're away at Fukuoka on Saturday night. Sendai hosting fellow dogfighter Tokushima on the Saturday afternoon is an interesting looking game, Johnny. And as you've said previously, you will be at Gunma Osaka versus Kashiwa in the late game on Sunday.
I will be there, but your old friend Richardson will not be there because he finally managed to meet the threshold of four yellow cards. So I can rest safe there. But I think it's interesting that we've both highlighted the same four games. There's the three derbies, and there's obviously a relegation six-pointer between Sendai and Tokushima. I think that the Sendai and Tokushima game is the only one in the slate I can think is really like vitally important for both teams. I think, well, you could say that obviously Yokohama FC are in a relegation battle and Yokohama F. Marinos are in a title race, but I think the gap in quality between those two teams, you know, it was 5-0 in the first game and it's almost not like a away game for Marinos. And same with Kawasaki and Shonan. Shonan will give them a good game. They did draw 1-1 away with Marinos earlier in the year, but you would expect, yeah, touch wood, you would expect the two title challengers to win. Fukuoka Tosu, yeah, it's interesting because there's not many teams in the league that are either safe from relegation but not in the ACL race. Fukuoka are one of those teams, and you know they've had a few good results, but they sort of drifted against Shonan. You might fancy Tosu as a derby. Tosu might be more up for it than Fukuoka. I mean, the rest of them, there's a few decent games, but there's kind of much of a muchness. I would say for the neutral, maybe it might not be the best quality of game, but I think Sendai Tokushima might be the game worth watching. It's the most riding on it. Well, what about yourself?
Yes, that's a good shout. And, well, hopefully for Jakub Slovak, he won't get robbed by an opposing attacker and, get the ball poked out from under his feet, leading to a goal for the opponent. I'm sure Slovak will be, at his most concentrated when Vortis visit the Yurtec Stadium on a Saturday afternoon. As we've said, yeah, so basically with summer winding down, as it's done for basically most of this month, the earlier kickoffs return that I'm sure Sam is not all that looking forward to with an earlier wake-up time in the UK once he eventually gets back to work after swanning around on his holidays. But anyway, that's for another time, and we'll give him a stern talking to on next week's episode, I'm sure. The only other game, and I feel obliged to mention it, I think the supporters of the two teams would certainly want me to mention FC Tokyo versus Urawa. There's always quite a bit of feeling in those clashes, and Ajinomoto Stadium, it certainly won't be rocking with the coronavirus inflicted restrictions on support, etc. But always a keenly fought encounter, and obviously Reds looking to push on for in that battle for third, and I'm certainly not jinxing FC Tokyo by mentioning those three letters that Simon did a few weeks ago that jinxed any hope we had of finishing third. That promises to be a decent game. I'll go along with you, Johnny, and say Sendai Tokushima for the neutral definitely has the most riding on it in match day 30. All right, well, I tell you what, we might do a little bit of a bonus chat on Gumba for the listeners that have stuck through this far. If you don't mind, Johnny, I'm sure you've combed over Gumba's remaining fixtures, and obviously you're well and truly aware of where Gumba sit in relation to the relegation zone, having spent so much time this season in the bottom four. So, yeah, you sit 7 points outside and on the back of four straight defeats, and as we've said, since your last appearance on the podcast, things have turned sour. So, to what extent are you still looking over your shoulder? What games have you highlighted in the run in as vital ones for Gumba that they need to be picking up points in? And I mean, we've mentioned how difficult it looks for the bottom four as it sits currently. So there are still two other teams that they would have to climb above before Gumba have to seriously worry. But as things sit here now, as we try to restore some positive juju to Gumba, how are you feeling about the run-in now, considering everything that's come before this season?
Most of my positivity comes not from Gumba, but more about the other teams, like kind of lack of form or lack of quality. And I was looking at the teams in the bottom four. I had a quick look through all their run-ins, and you know, the amount of points they've taken, the most a team has taken at the moment is like, you know, Tokushima have 23 from 29, 23 points from 29 games. If they were to take 12 points from the remaining 9 games, I think that's been quite positive to any of those teams, especially when they do play each other. But kind of looking at the fixtures, a lot of these teams do also still have to play games like Kashima away or Marinos at home. I struggle to see any of them taking, like, if any of them to end up with more than 35, 36 points. I think if you can get over, if you get 36 points, I think you'll be okay, which for Gamba is 2 wins or a win in 3 draws. And, I mean, Gamba themselves, the running is not particularly easy. They've still got to go to Urawa, they've got to go to Yokohama F. Marinos, and they've got to go to Kawasaki, and they also host both Tosu and Nagoya. Apart from that, though, I think the next two games, because Kashiwa, as we've said, are, like, they've not really got anything to play for, and they're very up and down. And that's then followed by Sapporo, who are another team that they tend to look very good against some teams, but Gamba seem to be able to get the upper hand against them. I mean, in a dream world, Gamba would win the next two home games and be home and hosed and don't have to worry about the remaining 7 games. Right. But those would be two we target. They've also got Oita away in round 35. And then hopefully nothing rides on it, but the final game at home to Satoshi Yamaguchi's Shonan Belmari. Mm. Yeah, I think Gamba are, we've mentioned disastrous, anus horribilis, and all these other words. I think there's other teams worse. I think Gamba can grind out a couple of ugly wins somewhere. And, yeah, what about you?
Yeah, I think, you don't want to utter those 4 words about being too good to do something. But, I think ultimately they're going to prove to be, I think I can safely say that there are going to be 4 teams worse off than Gumba at the end of the season, and probably 6 or 7. So, like you said earlier, you've just got to try and get through the season and, try and wipe it from your memory as quickly as possible. I mean, for a neutral, a casual supporter of Japanese football to tune into the game on the weekend and see Takashi Usami on the bench, that will have surprised that particular person, I suppose. So, what is there anything you can put your finger on for Usami's in particular, his lost season? Obviously, such a potent striker when he's really in his pomp. But, again, this season, the end of it can't come soon enough for him.
It's always difficult for me to be neutral when discussing Usami because he's, to me, to what Shoma Doi is to you. I'd never have him on the bench. But, I have to be careful choosing my words about Yajima because I criticised him and I have a Japanese friend who helps me translate articles and she's a big fan of Yajima, so I should be careful about what I really think about his continued selection in the team. But you could just feel, though, I know Kashima were 3-0 up when Usami came on, but just the respect the Kashima defence had for Usami versus anyone else in the Gamba team, there was this, oh, he's got the ball, what's he going to do? And there was almost like a kind of step back, you know, these kind of younger players. What's he going to do? And, yeah, I think I mentioned in, I think it was Sam asked me actually when it was one of my blog posts about like how a similar question to what you asked, and you still see like the zone commentators or the opposition managers will always mention Usami's build-up play, and even if he's not scoring or assisting, like in the Osaka derby we lost 1-0 to Cerezo, and that was a very scrappy game similar to our draw with FC Tokyo, but we lost 1-0, but Usami put this beautiful ball over the top, and then Onose crossed it over, and Patrick almost got his foot to it. So that shows up. There's no goal, no assist for Usami, but he actually like he carved open the Cerezo defence. He almost did it in the loss to Cerezo in the Levan Cup a week later. Yeah, it's not happened for him. Like he missed a big chance against Sendai when it was 2-2. That could have put us ahead. And Nishimura obviously went up the other end and made us pay for it. His confidence is down, and I think he puts a lot of pressure on himself. So when he doesn't get that goal, or he doesn't get the assist, or something doesn't come off, I think if he could just get a goal from somewhere, I think that would raise his confidence. It would raise the team's confidence. That the ability is still all there. He's got the respect of his teammates. He's got the respect of opponents. Yeah, sorry if it sounds a bit like an eulogy of someone who scored 3 goals for a team that's struggling in the bottom half of the league, but. Yeah, I think for the league in general, I think he's a player that the other teams like. I mean, similar to with FC Tokyo, I'm not an FC Tokyo supporter, but I've got a lot of respect for Diego Oliveira. I think he's one of the top players. I always enjoy watching him playing, even if it's against Gamba. I mean, as an opposing fan, how do you feel about Usami?
Yeah, well, as I said, yeah, on his day, there's basically no one better in J1. I think, yeah, he can be unplayable, and certainly. Yeah, a player I fear when Tokyo play against Gamba. So we can all hope that Gamba and especially Usami can put this year behind them. I mean, in a slightly similar vein. I mean, it's been a more precipitous drop. But I mean, you've seen what F. Marinos have been able to do this season, Johnny. I mean, the season after they won the league, they slipped down to 9th last season, and now they're right up there fighting for the title with Kawasaki. I mean, your team finished 2nd last season. You've slipped into the bottom half of the table, but yes, if you have an uninterrupted preseason and indeed the start to next season, they should be better next season. So yeah, all you can do is hope that the club as a whole will lift, and yeah, I'm sure Usami will be one of the keys to that. It's not all doom and gloom, and you can start to turn things around against Kashiwa. Okay, so yeah, enjoy that game, and thank you very much for filling the breach this week. It was you were the first name I thought of when Sam said he was going to be away. So I know we had some listeners looking forward to your appearance, and you certainly have not disappointed. So Johnny, thank you very much, and just get a couple of quick plugs in. Feel free to do that before we say goodbye on this episode.
Well, first, thanks very much for having me on. And I know you first stiff competition from John Steele, so I'll be on J-Talk extra time next week, which hopefully my drop from J1 to J2 is not followed by Gamba doing the same thing. But yeah, I am at Blog Gamba on Twitter. If you're not already following me, I'd really appreciate you following. I always do kind of preview, usually just previews for the games. I sometimes do kind of season previews and general stats. I think I have a holiday on Thursday, so probably the Kashiwa preview will be out on Friday. Lots of stats and sort of opinions in there. So yeah, if you're going to watch the game as a neutral or as a fan, it is Gamba-centric, but I always give the other teams a fair shake, so... thanks again though, Ben, for the opportunity to come on, and I hope there's not too many complaints from people like Kawasaki supporters or anything, but yeah, hopefully I'll be back on at some point to talk to yourself and Sam in the future.
Absolutely, we would love that, Johnny. Yes, again, we'll have to negotiate with John when we can win that tug of war seemingly on a week-to-week basis, but terrific stuff on this episode, and thank you very much for your time. We'll leave it there then, listeners. That's it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. On behalf of Sam, who's not here, of course, I would like to very much thank Johnny for his contribution to this week's episode. We'd like to thank Graham Freche for all of his questions as well, and indeed to all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/ J-Talk Pod. All right, well, I have it on good authority that Sam will be back next week as we round up at match day 30. So we'll speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.